It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Kevin Marks and Mike Elgin join Jeff Jarvis and me to talk about the 60 Minutes expose of the NSA. We'll also talk about some new tools from Google. Google giveth and Google taketh away. It's all next on our last Twig for 2013. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 229, recorded December 18th, 2013. Jiggery Pokery. This Week in Google is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. And by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit TV shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, your PC, your smartphone, your tablet, your Chromecast. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free two-week trial. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the Googleverse, the cloud. Jeff Jarvis is here. He is at his post at the City University of New York, where he's training young minds to the twisted world of journalism. Hello, Jeff. Happy holidays. Hello.
Same back.
Yep, I'm surprised you're at work.
I am still. I have meetings all day today. You know, everyone wants to jam everything in. Oh, my God, if we don't do it by the end of the year, it'll be next year. Next week.
But the kids have gone, right?
They're gone.
Yeah.
We had a graduation. I wore my...
Your gown?
Mufti, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you... Now, I remember when... Because my dad was a professor commencement, you'd wear the gown of the college from which you graduated or got your graduate degree.
Yes, but don't forget, I only have a bachelor's, so I don't have any hash marks or anything.
You have no gown.
I have a gown. I have the cheap gown.
Just a nylon thing that they rent. Yeah, Dad had, like, Columbia from a PhD at Columbia. He had, like, blue velvet and stripes. Yeah, and it wasn't a mortar board. It was, like, a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A bonnet.
I get jealous of those. It's not worth it to go get a degree just to get the dress.
No, that's a long way to go just for the dress.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome, and it's good to see you. We should mention once again, Gina Trapani's taking the month of December off to relocate. We miss her.
But yay, she'll be in New York.
Yeah. Baratunde just got his Brooklyn apartment, so...
Oh, wow.
There's a massive tilt to the east, I believe.
Yeah, you think Silicon Valley's all hip. It's not. Brooklyn is the place on Earth.
Oh, God, yeah. I interviewed Alexis Ohanian on Triangulation on Wednesday, and the founder of Reddit, and, of course, probably the king hipster.
Yes.
And people were coming over. They had people in the house. He actually gone into the bathroom to do the interview so that the people in the house, because they were all going to dinner afterwards, probably some, you know... Polenta crust pizza parlor. I hate you.
Oh, you make fun. You make fun, you jealous. Californian.
Hey, look who else is here. We got Kevin Marks. He is visiting us under his umbrella out in his garden, as usual.
Hello there. Nice to see you all.
I'm going to resist the temptation to say the out of works, Kevin Marks. I will say the consulting engineer, Kevin Marks.
There we go.
Ex of Google, Apple, Salesforce, British Telecom. This guy has left more
BBC.
Jobs. Which one? BBC. That's right. You started at the Beeb.
Yep.
That's where he gets that posh accent. And also with us, Mike Elgin, who was soon to take the helm as news director here at... Oh, he's wearing Google. Glass.
Yep.
Burgundy of Twit.
Exactly. Stay classy, Jeff Jarvis.
Grow your mustache now.
Oh, wait a minute. Set up on head detection. Enable this feature to consume less power when you're not wearing glass. This is your son's glass.
When is anybody not going to be wearing glass? You're going to wear it 24/7.
This is the one that's... This is a 2.0, right?
That's right.
And then supposedly I can wink, take off glass, put it back on, and tap touchpad. And then they have a lovely lady doing it. And it is okay. Done.
You just did something.
You heard a little click, right?
Yeah. Something happened.
Now I just see the Google logo. Is it rebooting?
No, that's just to program the Google logo into your brain.
That's what I'm that burning it into my iris.
Yeah.
Do you have glass, Kevin? I think you're the only one here who...
No.
It's not a glass hole.
I wear glasses all the time, so it wasn't practical. So it wasn't worth the
They will be now, though. You can add prescription lenses to this.
Glass hole is now a term of endearment, and so now we use glass wipe.
Glass wipe. Stay glassy, Petaluma.
I'll be sending my back in January, first week of January. I get my exchange.
Ah, good. So you already got your 2.0s.
This is my son's. He got it later, so he got his first pair was 2.0, and I have 2.0 on the way. This is the old one. That's the new one. They look identical, but the 2.0 has faster speeds and additional capabilities.
Have you found it to be fragile at all?
I actually broke my first pair.
Yeah.
I put it in my backpack in the case that they give you, and I bent it in half. It's happened to a lot of people. Yeah. They just replaced it, no questions asked.
Scoble's like on his third. Well, I think there's a little margin built in.
Well, he showers with the thing, so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have refused Scoble on that basis. Right.
So the one of the things, and this is, I think, a little controversial, that they have now enabled is blink to snap a picture. So with in the past with glass, you had to touch the temple and then say, okay, glass, take a picture. So it was,
or bring your head up and down and say, okay, glass.
Yeah. Oh, you could do that, right.
And that was way too talk. That was way too inconvenient.
Well, so it was a warning to those about that you were about to take a picture of them. Now you just wink, and it takes a picture.
Well, no, you always had the ability just to hit the little switch there.
Yep.
And take a picture.
Which is the most subtle way.
Or voice.
Oh, so you could do this and it would take a picture?
No, there's actually a camera. There's a button
right there on the top. A little back on the top. Right there. That's it.
So I could just do that. Yeah. But even that's more obvious than just blinking. And blinking also has a little bit of...
And winking is a little creepy. Yeah, if you're taking pictures of strangers, winking doesn't help.
And if you get a piece of dust in your eye, as Dr. Mom says, you could end up taking a lot of pictures you don't want. I don't know. I think that this I'm surprised. I remember it was a hack in the first glass. Mm. I'm surprised Google actually enables this.
Well, I think it's a speed thing. They've really tried hard to make it really fast to take a picture because that's really the only benefit. If you have to take out your phone and take a picture, that takes a while. But if you suddenly there's like something crazy happening right in front of you, you can just wink and you've got the picture. Even if it's off, it'll work. It's actually kind of amazing. It's just a little creepy to take pictures of strangers because they think you're the one who is stranger.
Yeah, no kidding.
Out there winking at people.
Google is very focused on photography, the additions to Google Plus. And now people are putting snow in their pictures by shaking their phone. That's their holiday.
I've had enough of that.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the photo stuff, but the twinkling and the snowing, they're just...
So you take an existing picture that's on your phone, and all you do is you shake it, and then it will generate snow like this.
You can share that.
And then, it doesn't automatically share, but if you save it, then you have a copy just like that.
Now, the other thing, the glass...
It randomly did it to one of mine, but except it managed to turn it upside down while it was doing it, so I had snow falling from the ground upwards.
That's worth something. That's an error at the printing plant.
Oh, is this like a misprinted stamp, is it?
Yeah.
I've got a collectible Google Plus.
I think so. But I guess it shows their capability. I don't know what it shows.
They seem obsessed with snow globes. They had the mall, like temporary mall... demo thing with the snow globes. You go inside the snow globes.
These guys
in snow globes.
That's right.
But anyway, it's a strange obsession.
Jeff?
Just saying that one more glass story that just came out was that I think in a week or so, an independent facial recognition app is coming.
Oh, will Google block it, right? They have to approve it, right? They can't. It doesn't just appear.
Yeah. Yep.
Unless you can you sideload on glass?
You can't. Well, I mean, it won't be listed among the normal apps that are generally
but you could
given.
Sideload
but it can be out there. There are kind of R-rated apps and things like that. They don't approve that people can still
the world's tiniest porn.
Yeah, like I'd want to. That's ridiculous.
I think that's a breast.
I don't know what this is, but it's flesh colored and I like it. So they're gonna see. Okay. So there's two issues of privacy. One is that you're surreptitiously taking pictures. That's why I'm surprised that they approved the winking. But the other is this facial recognition, which I think is very, very valuable.
Yeah, I think that's great.
But Google has declined to do it, even though they can, because of the issue of stalkers, right?
No, it's just because they think it sounds creepy. This was directly a Schmidt thing, wasn't it?
Crosses the creepy line.
Because they built this years ago with Google Goggles. There was a version of that would identify people. that they tested and then said, no, right. We don't want to do that. That's too creepy.
Right.
Let's be honest. It's going to, whether, you know, fine, Google's not going to do it. They're going to wait for others to do it. It's going to become popular. It's going to work. You can't stop it. It's just knowledge. Knowledge is not dangerous. Being creepy is what's creepy.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
The other thing is that it's just a convenience. You can already take a picture surreptitiously, yeah. upload it to Google Plus, and Google Plus will tell you who it is.
Right.
Yeah. So why not, you know, why wait?
And as I've pointed out with back in the goggles days, the government already does it, so shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we be able to?
Plus, I'll bet somebody, one of my students, I think I told you a year ago, is trying to use glass with people with Alzheimer's. There'll be therapeutic uses of it that are valuable for people.
Well, for all of us above a certain age, Jeff.
Well, yes. Uncle Leo.
I don't remember people's names.
Oh, God, no.
I mean, I get introduced to people and 5 minutes later have no idea who they are. So having glass would be great. Yep. Mm. That, face recognition glass, anyway.
There's also the problem of phantom glass syndrome, which I've suffered from. I've actually looked up to get information, and there was nothing there. I've also touched the side of my head, and there was just nothing.
A phantom glass syndrome.
Tragic.
Poor Mike Elgin. Yeah. He was a normal man until he got struck with phantom glass syndrome. Google apparently is moving ahead with its photographic stuff. They just hired Blaise Aguera-Yarcas, who is the guy who did Photosynth for Microsoft, which is an amazing, wonderful technology. I think that was one that Robert Scoble said he was in tears when he saw it. I may be wrong, but if he wasn't crying, he should have been. Photosynth is really, really beautiful. He just helped Microsoft with the newest version of Photosynth, which ironically appeared on iOS first, not on Microsoft's Windows phones. He's going to work on machine learning at Google, according to the New York Times, who quote, people with knowledge of his plans who asked to remain anonymous, because news of his hiring had not been publicly announced. Mr. Aguera-Yarcas has confirmed that he has left Microsoft to join Google, but wouldn't say what he was going to do. Microsoft says we wish him well in his future endeavors.
He's an amazing engineer because he's been involved. Well, he's been involved in a very wide variety of projects, including augmented reality, wearable computing. He was deeply involved in Bing, the development of Bing. So these are disparate, unrelated areas, and he's been involved in all of them.
Which that makes sense. He is kind of an AI guy then.
Yeah,
he's kind of a machine intelligence guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And so who knows what he's going to do at Google, but it's a big blow to Microsoft. You know, this is the problem with Microsoft. They have such good research. They develop so much good technology.
Yeah.
And then where is it?
You know, reminds me of another company. It began with an X. Xerox, I think, was the name of it. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
In fact, somebody once wrote a book on how Xerox invented the world and then lost it, you know, never made it happen.
But the difference is Microsoft is a company that, rightly or wrongly, for various reasons, some people don't trust as much. It became more the Borg. Xerox was never a Borg company. It was just kind of, didn't go on and do its own stuff. I think some things that Microsoft tried to develop didn't develop because it was Microsoft.
Right. Yeah, Photosynth is a really neat technology, but it doesn't really fit the Windows Office Nexus.
Yeah, and some of the content things they've done, and when they tried to do their version of the wallet way, way, way back when, and people just didn't want to do it with Microsoft. And Microsoft had a certain, it limited itself to what it was envisioned to be.
But I've seen things in Microsoft research that are the kinds of things that are becoming just now coming online, and I saw them a decade ago at Microsoft.
Right.
Things like voice recognition. Right. They made a big point to say that all of these things were using off the shelf laptops and computers, nothing fancy, and this is, you know, old stuff by today's standards. And they were doing amazing things. They had this voice recognition thing that could give you computer voice in any celebrity's voice. They had JFK, Marilyn Monroe. This is like 12 years ago. And you never even heard about it outside of their
lives. Wait, the computer voice sounded like Marilyn Monroe?
Yes, almost indistinguishable.
That's kind of intriguing.
It was fascinating.
Yeah.
It would also learn your voice and would speak in your voice.
What?
Yeah. And they were doing this kind of stuff. They also had this fascinating project they were working on, which was 3D avatar chat, where they had two cameras, kind of like Kinect, actually.
On you.
And it would 3D map your face.
Wow.
And then you would chat with people by looking at the avatar. They found that the reason people don't like video conferencing is that they can't make eye contact. Right. One person's looking over here and the other person's looking over there. But with an avatar, everybody, each person can look at the make eye contact with the computer-generated avatar. Fascinating technology, using off-the-shelf parts and nothing fancy, and it went nowhere.
Is that where Google, is that the difference with Google? Google, it seems like its R&D almost always ends up in a product of some kind, even if it's a moonshot like self-driving
cars.
Even
if they kill it later, they play with it. Well, it's part of the openness. They open it up to the public and say, what do you think of this? We're not sure.
Speaking of which, have you met Google's newest employee? They call him Big Dog. Yes, he's a little noisy. But imagine seeing this coming at you through the woods. Boston Dynamics, the robotics company making these robots for the U.S. Department of Defense, just acquired the eighth robotics company purchased by Google, presumably for whatever robotics project Andy Rubin is working on. Although Andy said, I'm working on business to business. I don't know. I don't know what business this is.
It's a courier service.
Well, you know what?
I'm
it could
sure
be.
Watch. We want Google.
He's
going
to try to kick it
government.
Over. That is uncanny. That looks like there's a man in there.
Yeah.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
Boston Dynamics specialized in robots that locomote using human-like or animal-like capabilities. This is a four-legged creature that can walk over uneven terrain and keep its balance. I mean, that guy kicked it, and it did not fall over. And it really looks like a human.
It's a lot better than I can, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, if it's not smart enough to get off the snow and into the road.
Go to the road, Big Dog. So Andy Rubin is obviously he's got a big checkbook. They're giving him letting him buy anything he wants.
Unbelievable.
This to me is a little creepy.
Yeah. You know, here's what I fear about this. So it's not very far. This thing is because it's done for DOD. This thing carries guns and weapons, and it becomes the landlubber drone.
They want to use it instead of mules. Although, as Mike pointed out on Sunday, a mule is a lot cheaper. It probably does exactly the same thing.
Should the government, should Google really be doing, especially right now, the bidding of the government for these kinds of secret projects?
Well, they said that Google said that they are going to honor the existing contracts, but accept no additional future contracts. They did.
I didn't see that.
So this is actually one of the most interesting aspects of this story. The Pentagon needs to find a robotic donkey supplier because these guys are out of it.
Out of the robotic donkey.
Thank you, Mike. I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And yet they are still doing government work. Yeah. Just we don't know for how long.
Yeah.
So a Big Dog can handle 225-pound payload.
It can dance.
And can dance. Actually, a cheetah, this is another one of them, can run faster than Usain Bolt. Look at this. Yeah. This. I mean, I get. I don't know what if this is a pack
it's impressive
animal.
Science.
It's pretty impressive.
Well, I my feeling is that this the founder of Boston Dynamics has always specialized. I think his name is Mark Raybert in duplicating animal locomotion, and the reason for that is it's more efficient. Nature has already come up with
is
the best
true?
Forms of locomotion.
Is that true? Because sometimes I feel like nature came up with like the least
kludges.
Yeah, the least unacceptable kludge as opposed to the most efficient means.
I feel like a kludge many days myself.
Yeah. Look at this. This is the big dog, the cheetah running.
Right. It could go to the gym for you. Think about that. You just send this thing to the gym and work out for you.
But notice that there's a massive tether. I mean,
Yeah.
Big dog was gas powered. That's why it was so noisy. But I don't know.
Yeah. It's and of course Google purchased eight robotics companies in the last 6 months.
Busy,
and many of them are body parts. There's one company that specializes in robotic hands. There's robotic eyes. These kinds of things. So they're body parts. I don't think they've purchased, to the best of my knowledge, any companies that specialize in robotics, computer machine intelligence. I guess Google will do that part.
This is a walking man, pet man. Who was able to walk over Sprint ads in a single bound.
You can't look at that without thinking of Skynet.
It's very Terminator-like. Yeah. I mean,
Or,
come with me if you want to save your life. If you want to live. What?
That would be a good celebrity voice. Microsoft should collaborate with
that. Wow. It's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
It's a bit Battlestar Galactica. What was that series?
Oh, yeah, Cylons,
Caprica, where they had the guy making these in the lab.
Right.
Okay, Kevin, you win the Nerd Award of the day.
Yes, Caprica. So should we be, but that's the problem with science fiction. It's just fiction. So you can't let that stop you because, you know, Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. As somebody in the chat room, Castle Bravo says in the chat room, the future is both interesting and scary.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Is. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I just wrote a column about this concept. What is it that's scary about this kind of technology? What is it that's creepy? And I have come to believe that it's the combination of the fear of the unknown combined with a fear of being out of control. So people don't know what these things are going to be capable of, and they have a strong feeling that they won't have any control over it coming into our lives. And that creeps us out.
That's I've told the story many, many times on the show, but that's the case with many technologies, starting, you know, the Kodak camera, the book, the press.
Yeah, but the Kodak camera couldn't run 28.3 miles an hour.
But it could take your picture and steal your soul.
I feel like it's part also Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
the
I was about to say that.
Where you don't want to make it, it's very hard to do animations that look just like humans because they're just off enough that the human brain goes, ooh, that's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
And we're programmed for disgust. In fact, one of our regular listeners does research in disgust. I think he's at Cornell. And disgust is a very valuable evolutionary trait because it keeps you from eating rotten food. And we also have disgust at malformed creatures.
Yeah.
And you know, those are potentially dangerous situations. So I think it's partly that.
Yeah. But we have the opposite too, Leo. There's a wonderful researcher at MIT wonderfully named Kate Darling, who does cute little robot things to make you cuddle with, right? You know, it's the cyber cat. And then she tries to get people to destroy it.
And they can't.
And they can't. Right? It's logically it's just a machine. I could destroy this computer. Well, no. Yeah, I'll destroy the Mac. I won't destroy my Chromebook.
So Boston Dynamics blew it. They should have made Big Dog look like an Ewok.
Well, it's an interesting fact that Mark Raybert, who founded this company in 1992, was actually a consultant. He was a consultant on the Sony Aibo. Remember that? That was a cute and cuddly robot.
Aibo was cute and cuddly. So apparently the Petman can actually do the John Travolta impression. Just exactly the right kids. It's also scary because it looks like here's what's the most scary thing you can think of: a human being with no conscience,
a killing machine,
that doesn't care.
Yeah,
better, more powerful than
many a fine movie.
And
they can be replicated in factories, you know, like iPhones, just cranking these things.
Isn't Google making all that?
Yeah.
We're pushing us in that direction.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, just saying.
Well, so Larry gets his Google Island, and we're not allowed there.
Right. I'm sorry. You must turn back. You know, it would be great if you could use technology like that to make more money.
Somehow.
Keep track of your financial status. Wait, you can with Personal Capital. We'll be back in just a minute with This Week in Google. Our sponsor this week is Personal Capital. I talked to Bill Harris, the founder of Personal Capital, on a triangulation about a year ago. In fact, that's when I first got my first Personal Capital account. He was the CEO of PayPal and Intuit and had really done a lot of, I think, profound thinking about finance, about money, about our relationship to money. One of the things, of course, he learned at Intuit is that people want to keep track of their financial life. They want better tools for doing that. And that's what Personal Capital is. It's a dashboard for your financial life. You give it your accounts, all of your accounts, in a single spot. And you know, it's truism that the more money you have, the more successful you are, the more you got to keep track of, the more complicated it becomes. You've got checking and savings accounts, retirement accounts, credit cards, investments. You've got mortgages, you've got loans. Well, this is what Personal Capital does. It puts it all in one place so you can look at it, gives you information that helps you make the most of it, and investment advice so that you can do the right thing and then reap the benefits. I think this is I've been very, very happy with Personal Capital. I want you to try it. The nice thing about all this is free. Go to personalcapital.com/twig. You can sign up in just a minute. And I'm telling you, big dividends. They're very secure, multi-factor authentication so that, you know, you can't use Personal Capital unless you have a second factor in there on your device and so forth. So it's really safe to use on your iPhone, your iPad. They've got free apps on a desktop computer as well, the website, personalcapital.com. Find out more at personalcapital.com/twig and sign up free, absolutely free today. So it is final exam time. I know Henry just finished his exams, is coming home. Abby finished her exams today. Your students have headed for home, Jeff Jarvis. There was a kid at Harvard didn't really want to take his exams.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
And, well, we know now it was a kid because there was a bomb threat phoned into to Harvard, and actually email bomb threat to Harvard. And the suspect, according to Bruce Schneier on security, did everything he could to be anonymous. He used an anonymous email account. He used Tor, the Onion router. And nevertheless, the FBI was able to identify the suspect. We got to say the suspect. And make an arrest. Turns out, according to the criminal complaint, Bruce Schneier read it, the FBI got itself a list of Harvard users that had accessed Tor and went through them one by one to figure out who it was sent the threat.
Oof.
Ow.
Well, he sent it on their network, right, which meant they actually had the packets going out.
Yeah. So he did what would be a smart thing, created a new account.
It'd be a lot smarter to have gone to the town library to do
that. That would have
right?
been better. That would be better, yeah. Yeah, I guess he did it from his dorm room. Hey, he was behind on his exams. He didn't have time to go to the library. If he had, he could have studied.
You know the famous story of Zuckerberg and his art final?
No.
That I heard him tell the story that he had not. He was too busy starting a $100 billion company. He hadn't studied for his art final at all, and he put up all of the pictures that they were supposed to analyze and sent everybody an email saying I put up a study guide, and Harvard students, being Harvard students, fell over themselves to get the best essential descriptions, and the professor said that the class got better grades than ever, according to Mark. And this, I think, is an example of wonderful crowdsourcing and platform making. But, of course, in the movie about Mark, they presented it as if it was cheating.
Just as the NSA portrayed Edward Snowden as a cheater on its 60 Minutes piece.
Oh, that was
Sunday.
The most dreadful. The fall of 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes, the last Tiffany gem is gone. It's a bad Kubrick zirconia at CBS now. It was just an absolute dreadful. They, after having gotten in trouble for hiring or for assigning a military fan to do a story on the military,
ex employee of the director of national intelligence,
they put a security fan to do the security story in John Miller. Yeah, who at the same time was trying to come back to the New York NYPD to work for Bratton.
So I mean, he's going to quit. Now that he's done his duty, he's going to quit and go to work for the NYPD. He is, to be fair, he's done television news reporting for a long time. He's a senior correspondent at CBS, but has a lot of connections.
And it was
with law enforcement.
Kiss ass piece to the NSA.
Well, okay. Could you reasonably position it as it was giving the NSA the chance to tell their side?
But even a reporter who does that should then throw
against tough questions.
What the other side is to them, yeah. And ask some tough questions, yeah. And not do it. And not, well, they showed us the door to the secret room.
Yeah.
You know, it was absolutely dreadful and shameful.
So this is the third strike. You got Laura Logan, you got Charlie Rose,
yep.
And now you got John Miller.
And let's go back to Dan Rather. yeah, it's the fall of
So what was wrong with this piece?
What was wrong with it?
Yeah.
Just that. It was not challenging at all.
It was a propaganda
piece.
It was
flackery. Yeah. It was flackery. Yeah.
They pure.
And just look at the description of Snowden as a...
they even used an ad hominem attack that seemed completely not germane, that he, when he was at home computing, put a hood over himself and his girlfriend thought that was weird. It's like... That seemed like a completely ad hominem.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, but actually, it was only a smart thing. The Guardian, and this has now been made public, the Guardian was warned that they shouldn't have anything and say anything in offices. Their offices are very windowed on next to a canal in London, and that other agents could come and use lasers bouncing off of plastic cups on their desk to hear and see what they say.
They can do that, by the way.
Yes. So that's why he used a hood, obviously.
Right.
To me, the problem was that they presented a very strong side of the story, which there isn't necessarily anything wrong with that. But then they pretended as if it were not controversial. They didn't
the NSA
bring out.
Doesn't collect yes. phone information on right. American citizens, just metadata, which a judge the next day ruled unconstitutional.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yep. And so that just looks foolish.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of The Guardian. I work with The Guardian, full disclosure. I'm a fan of what Snowden is doing. That's my view of the story. Right. And fine. But then present that view of the story and hear the NSA's best arguments against it. Fine. I moderated a panel with Bob Kerry in which he went after me about just these topics with Yochai Benkler and Bob Kerry going after a lot. My position was clear, but Bob Kerry was there to present the best that he could for that side.
We've even done that on this show. I've tried to represent the NSA side.
You were the Stuart Baker character.
In fact, Stuart did email us, and I apologize, Stuart, for not getting back to you. We'll get him on the show. I think that would be very interesting. Yeah, because there are two sides to this. But that was a fairly self-serving piece for the NSA.
By the way, the NSA report, the committee, the I would say dubiously appointed committee. Just released its report minutes ago, 46 major recommendations. It's like 300 pages. The funny thing is they didn't invite The Guardian to the announcement. The joke on Twitter is, well, of course, The Guardian already had it. Somebody leaked it to them.
Yeah.
What about this contention that Snowden has millions or at least a million more documents, some of which could be very detrimental to the U.S. interests?
I think there was a misinterpretation of what Alan Rusberger, the editor of The Guardian, said in Parliament, because he said that 1% of the documents were out. And I don't know this from Alan. I mean to ask them. But I think that my interpretation of what he said was he was talking about actual physical views of the documents. And whereas I think that they've used a tremendous number of documents already in the reporting. And yes, there is more stuff that's there. The shocking thing is that they can't find out how much he has because the monitoring software wasn't existent, wasn't turned on in the office where he was in Hawaii, and Snowden knew that. And so he was able to get more in a short time. But I come back to the argument that nothing bad has happened from Snowden's revelations. They have been responsible. They have brought things into the public discussion that needed to be brought in the public discussion. Witness that decision about metadata and phone metadata. Witness the fact that there's a report today from a committee reviewing what the NSA is doing. Witness the fact that our allies are also questioning what happens with surveillance. This is important to have a discussion of in a democracy, and it was here only because of what Edward Snowden did. He shouldn't have had to do it. The system should be better. But that's where it is.
Meanwhile, the heads of many of the big technology companies, including Eric Schmidt of Google, Marissa Meyer at Yahoo, LinkedIn, AOL, all of the big companies met with President Obama yesterday. Schmidt began the meeting by going over those five principles we talked about in the full page ad and the website, begging the president to change government surveillance programs. Mm-hmm. Nobody's who was in the room is talking out loud.
Right. Yeah, which a little irony right there. Can't you tell us something of what happened in this meeting? Secrecy on secrecy.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way,
share that picture there for a second. I like the guy. He's a nice guy. He's a smart guy. But what is Mark Pincus doing there?
He's Zynga. Zynga.
A game company?
Well, NSA is going into games to collect metadata there, too.
He also gave more than $1 million to the Obama campaign.
Oh, yeah. That.
All of the two of them contributed to Obama. So
that's interesting.
AT&T didn't and Eric Schmidt didn't. AT&T's Randall Stevenson, I think his name is.
He was there, yeah, the CEO
of
AT&T.
Made a huge contribution to Romney. And he's there because AT&T is, I believe, the number one contributor to political campaigns and political parties in the world,
right.
In the U.S. AT&T drops a lot of money in Washington.
Is this just a photo op, or do you think there really were... there was any intent on the part of the administration to listen to these guys? I mean, this is the economic engine that drives the United States. I mean, you know, it's not an industrial, but in terms of the information age, these are the big names, the big companies.
Obviously, nothing's going to happen at this meeting,
right?
Right. But it in optics, as they like to say, the fact that eight major companies took out that full page ad,
yeah.
Directly to the president and Congress, giving them principles to live by that they have not created, and that this meeting then occurs, says that it didn't fall on deaf ears. It may have felt on obstinate ears, but not deaf ears. And that there is something that we're talking about here. Again, we're having the debate. Thanks to Edward Snowden, we're having it. And so there it is. And so there's an obvious political pressure that's here and that had to be dealt with and still has to be dealt with.
Marissa Mayer, CEO at Yahoo, warned the president of balkanization of the internet as international companies or international governments don't stop dealing with American companies for fear of spying. Dick Costolo was there from Twitter, Brad Smith, general counsel at Microsoft, vice president, general counsel at LinkedIn, CEO of Etsy, CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings was there. Drew Houston of Dropbox was there, Zynga, Shervin Pishavar, Brian Roberts of Comcast.
It's kind of an odd list if you think about it.
Well, it's not an odd list when you think that all but two contributed to the Obama campaign.
Well, the other thing is that this whole NSA thing is taking off the table a whole bunch of other issues that I think should be on the table as well. I mean, this NSA scandal is really screwing American technology companies.
Yep.
And it's very dangerous for them.
Yeah, but Congress issued a warning last year that we shouldn't be buying phones from Huawei and ZTE because they were partly owned by the Chinese government. I mean, it's a two-way street.
Well,
nobody trusts anybody anymore.
But the NSA, one of their highest priorities should be protecting Silicon Valley.
They even
from the Chinese.
They even say that's their agenda,
and they fail completely to do that. There's some recent reports coming out demonstrating that the Chinese government just pretty much gets every secret they want, every military and technology secret, and they're into industrial espionage and all these other things. And what is the NSA doing about that? What is the federal government doing about that? No, instead they're doing the opposite.
You're giving a corollary argument to the one that well everybody else spies, so we should too. Well, the Chinese do bad stuff. That doesn't by any means justify us doing it as well.
No, but I have a feeling that the Chinese government was loath to buy American goods before.
Yes.
Right. I mean, maybe the Germans.
Except
now.
Cisco goods that they use to make the great firewall.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's part of the problem is if you don't get it from the U.S., there's a lot of stuff you can't get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think of this, Kevin Marks? You're an international person.
International traveler.
Man of mystery.
Have you ever been cavity searched at the border?
I hope you
pay your maid well.
I did get searched on my way out of the country for having too many wires in my bag.
We all have that problem. Yeah.
Actually, no, that was going from London to Paris. That's when I got searched there. You know, there's this amount of window dressing with the more meeting with the president, but, you know, at least that's useful window dressing. It makes a change from being called before Congress to testify because they've allegedly done something wrong, which was the previous pattern. I think the other subtext of that meeting was they said, oh, we're asking them to help us sort out the healthcare website.
Yeah. No,
which was kind of a...
Yeah.
But then they appointed someone from Microsoft to do that, which was also kind of odd. So that, you know, there's a bunch of structural bits and pieces there. So, you know, there's kind of a recognition that that these companies are doing useful things and the government should listen to them more. And certainly, I know that they've got some smart people who are working at the White House now who've come from the Valley. Again, there was a sort of wave of that when the first Obama administration came in. There's another wave of that going on now where some people are moving there as in the office of the CTO and things. So hopefully they'll be paying a bit more attention. One of the UK angle on this is that they've invested very heavily in building up expertise in open source and open standards within government, and the Cabinet Office has the Government Data Services team that is explicitly trying to reinvent government websites so that they don't cost millions of dollars and get farmed out to ridiculously expensive contractors, but are able to build on open source technologies and reuse things where they need to. And that's definitely a trend that's welcome and starting to bear some fruit in the UK, which is something that's been going on for maybe 3 years, 3 or 4 years there.
Angela Merkel, we're learning now, after hearing from Der Spiegel that the Americans were listening to her personal cell phone, called President Obama and said, this is like the Stasi, the East German secret police, that she... Mm-hmm. She was an East German, so she had some experience with. She was particularly angry, according to the New York Times, that the NSA, quote, couldn't be trusted with private information because They let Snowden clean them out. So, A, she's pissed off that we're spying on her, and B, that damn Snowden guy cleaned you out.
Well, same with your Senator Feinstein. She, you know, NSA was fine and wonderful and glorious until one of her own, that is to say Angela Merkel, one of that level, got hacked. And then that's when she got mad.
Yeah.
By the way, then now Feinstein, after the court decision about the metadata, Feinstein said, well, it's good to have, but not all that critical. Not long ago, she was saying it was vital to have that to stop terror.
The metadata. Well, see, this is the thing. And I think this is why the 60 Minute piece tells you a lot about what the NSA thinks the American people will tolerate, what the American people understand. And I think that they're very clear that the American people don't think metadata is an issue. Like, well, big deal. They know what calls I made to whom, when.
Right.
So what? They're not listening to the calls. That's what I'm worried about. But those of us who follow this stuff, and that includes all of you watching and listening, know that big data, this is precisely the kind of data that you can use to find out all sorts of stuff. You don't really need the call content.
Right. The metadata process that they're using is precisely the thing that makes it unconstitutional. They want this data so that they can go fishing for crimes or terrorism acts or things like that, because actually what they're trying to do is solve pre-crime. This is Minority Report stuff here. They're not trying to solve crimes. They're trying to stop crimes before they happen. And so they feel that they need this tool. But essentially, metadata just enables them to go on these phishing expeditions. And all these things have slippery slopes.
That's exactly right.
And by the way, the review panel, the NSA review panel is releasing its findings right now. And right up front, one of the first things they said.
I was just going to read that.
This is fascinating. This is from the report. Finally, the report says, we cannot discount the risk, in light of the lessons of our own history, that at some point in the future, high-level government officials will decide that this massive database of extraordinarily sensitive private information is there for the plucking. And here's the big quote, the pull quote. Americans must never make the mistake of wholly trusting our public officials. This is from a government review panel.
Yeah, this is from the rubber stamp, so it's so strong.
Holy
The next post there, it says that metadata can reveal, quote, calls to the psychiatrist, the plastic surgeon, the abortion clinic, the AIDS treatment, and so on. Knowing that the government has ready access to one's phone call records can seriously chill associational and expressive freedoms, and knowing that the government is one flick of a switch away from such information can profoundly, quote, alter the relationship between citizen and government in a way that is inimical to society.
Boom!
So Edward Snowden should be banned from this country forever because he caused this debate.
Yeah, he revealed that horrible secret. So that was, to me, the big takeaway of the 60 Minute piece. The NSA did, in fact, say, yes, we're hoovering up all call records. Yes, we are.
Yes.
And we're saving them for years. But just the metadata, folks, tells you two things. One, they admit it. Two, they think you're too stupid to know what the implications of that are.
And also, Leo, this is the problem of regulating to technologies rather than principles, right? So let's move this back to mail, right? The first example we've used in the show many times is that your contents of a first-class letter or package are can be searched only with warrant, right? And we agree with that as a society. That's what should happen. And, of course, that didn't extend over to email itself because of all the reasons we've discussed. Now we get to the metadata side, right? The presumption about metadata is that, well, it can be seen by the postman, it can be seen by anybody, so it's okay. So to this day, the USPS now photographs the cover of every single letter that is mailed. Now, the argument might still be made that, that's just who sent to whom, what's the big deal? But now what the Monday decision said about metadata is that, the NSA turned off my lights, is that now there's that much more data that lets you put together a very complex mosaic of life around this metadata. So there's a continuum here that either says that our communication is sacrosanct or not, regardless of technology, and it either says that metadata is presumed to be public or not. And they got it both ways, right? They said, well, no, our communication is not protected, but metadata is always okay. And we have to regulate this to principles, which is what the technology companies at least are starting to go with the White House on. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is technology companies don't hoover everything, go after specific cases and specific matters. And that is what the law was until 9/11.
The three major telecoms, this is fascinating. So what's happening is they released the report, which is very long and very dense, hundreds of very dense pages. And now people at The Guardian and elsewhere are parsing through it, and they're live blogging it as they read it, which is
that's
great.
The Guardian.
Yeah,
Guardian
watching the live blog of The Guardian. Glenn Greenwald tweeting, wouldn't it be increasingly hard to say Snowden is a felon deserving decades in prison when the courts and the White House's own panel are saying all of this? Guardian business correspondent Dominic Rush, who's one of the people looking at it, finds some interesting ambivalence in the telecom industry about new restrictions on NSA access to customer data. AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint declined to comment on the new proposal to have them hold customer data on NSA's behalf, but one executive warned it could create as many problems as it solved. Quote, it would be costly for us, and more than that, it would potentially open access to consumer data to other government agencies. Once they know that we are holding the information, what's to stop the IRS for asking for it?
Exactly.
It wouldn't just be the NSA anymore.
But also the telcos have a lucrative business in billing the government.
They make good money on
this
it.
Stuff. That's one of the reasons that the AT&T lot wouldn't sign on to the thing. The other companies said was they didn't want to talk about this. But you know, they've already had the retroactive immunity thing written into the law. But also they have this, you know, that they basically say, yeah, sure, you can have that data. That'll cost you this much. And they've turned it into a revenue stream.
Right. And one question of why didn't Amazon sign the letter? Oh, you know, one speculation, it's just speculation that I hear around, is Amazon has CIA contracts.
Right.
I don't know. I don't mean to besmirch, but you have a lot of data about us, Amazon. You are the library of today. Libraries have a ethical view that they should never release the card of what you read. So Amazon, are you a library or not?
Right. Yep.
Well, there'll be lots more. And the good news is Patrick Leahy has asked for a January testimony on this report, which means it'll keep it in the news cycle, because this is actually a great time from the NSA's
nice
point
if,
of view to release this information, because nobody's paying any attention. They're busy shopping.
It'd be nice if Greenwald, yeah, that's right, before Christmas.
Yep.
It'd be nice if Greenwald and Snowden could testify as well.
Yeah, via Skype. Of course. Google and Facebook, according to the Wall Street Journal, are expanding their efforts to control the world's internet backbone. It's currently controlled, at least in the U.S., by the telecoms, Sprint, AT&T. Sprint's, I think, the biggest. Google has spent years piecing together its own network of private fiber optic cables, now has more than 100,000 miles of backbone route throughout the world. That's bigger than Sprint, which is 40,000 miles. And to reduce costs and probably also to increase privacy, both Google and Facebook are starting to light these dark fiber cables to provide their own backbone. This is amazing. Both Google and Facebook have undersea cables to Asia.
Yep. Yeah. All
their
the way
own.
All the way from California to Japan. That is a big sea, the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
This actually, hints of this began about 9 years ago when a technology publication called Light Reading noticed a job listing for somebody whose job was essentially to go shopping for dark fiber. And by the way, for people who don't know what dark fiber is, dark fiber is fiber optic cable that has been laid but isn't being used.
It's not lit up.
Right, because what happened in the tech boom in the 90s, all the irrational exuberance caused the telcos to just invest massively in fiber. They thought it was all going to be used up, and then nobody used it. So it's been sitting there all this time, and so wealthy companies like Google can come along and buy it. That's one thing they're doing. They're also laying their own, and they're all doing it for different reasons. For example, Facebook is either doing dark fiber or they're laying their own cables so that they can have this massive data center near the Arctic Circle.
Whoa. Because the cooling's cheap up there.
Because the cooling's cheap up there. Just open the window.
And the energy.
And the laws are somewhat better, too.
Yeah.
Right. And Microsoft is using it for a similar purpose, which is that they're going to super inexpensive areas for their data centers to operate. Google just wants massively high-speed internet at low cost. And in fact, I've encountered this myself. In Istanbul earlier this year, I got a chance to go to the Google office and use their internet. And wow, in Istanbul, this was a blistering fast
that's neat.
Internet connection. Yeah, so their Google offices have, you know, fiber to the nearest hub or something, because it's just blisteringly fast. And it's a fascinating thing. And it turns out, actually, that when Google goes to telcos to make these deals for Google Fiber, the telcos have a contract saying, we'd like you to sign this. And Google says, get rid of it. Here's our contract. Yeah. Take it or leave it. And they have all the power now.
Well, but also they have to do deals with the Department of Homeland Security as they lay these cables to protect U.S. interests. It must be a hell of a negotiation.
Yeah.
But why should the telcos own this? That's for historic reasons.
Well, but there's some conspiracy. You know, oh no, the big companies are trying to get bigger. Well, the telcos weren't on that letter, weren't in that group. The telcos are not protecting your interests and your rights.
Right.
You're better off in the hands of Google and yes, Facebook.
Right.
They have opposite incentives. The Googles and the Facebooks have an incentive to make the internet as fast and cheap as possible, and the telcos have it the opposite. And so that's why I'm on the side of
Don't Google and Facebook also spy on us in order? That's their that's their business model.
Sure,
that's not spying. No, Leo, that's not spying. That's a transaction of information for in return for relevance.
But faster
is
internet.
Is it explicit?
Yes, it's explicit. It's not, you bet it is. I tell explicit. Google where I am to find
with,
out where
with
the
Google.
Pizza
I would argue is probably more explicit than Facebook.
Yeah,
does Facebook make it explicit?
Facebook does not make it very explicit. They talk about making the world more open and available. They do say that stuff.
Open and available to us, so we can sell more ads.
Right, but somebody pointed out that Facebook is indexing the text you type but don't send, as part of their trying to make more sense of what you're doing.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So if you decide to send a status update, man, am I drunk. And then go, I better not send that. Don't worry, Facebook's already got it. It's okay.
Yeah, I think that the question of privacy and all that kind of stuff is separate from the issue of bandwidth. I mean, half the bandwidth in the U.S. is, or maybe even in the world, is used up by YouTube.
That's actually one of the big problems that Google has.
Right, exactly. And a third in the U.S. is used up by Netflix.
Netflix, yeah.
And so, you know, if they're gonna harvest our personal information, at least they'll do it faster. Get it over with.
Yeah, I mean, I trust Google more than I trust government. Or at least, that's not true. I trust Google actually about the same. But at least I'm less worried with what they might do with that information. They're going to sell ads versus send a tax.
That's always the key
house.
Issue. Government can, and that's my argument in my book, is that government fancies itself a protector of privacy, and across Europe, that's the case. It is the worst enemy of privacy because it can gather and use our information against us in ways no one else can.
But there's another point. Yeah, there's another point too. That there are governments, and then there are governments. There's the government that can't put together a healthcare website, completely inept, and which cannot keep secrets, especially over the long term. And then there's the NSA, which can keep secrets and does. And you know, that's an entirely different thing. That's why we can't trust the NSA, because they are a secret organization and they do stuff and they expect to get away with stealing. I mean, they're in the stealing information business. That's what they do. And so without oversight, who knows what they're doing? Rest of the government, all the facts will get out.
There's no oversight on private industry at all.
Oh, yes, there is. There's the market.
Who watches Google?
Well,
the market.
The market.
There is legal oversight in different countries. Yes. It varies a bit as well.
Right.
There are privacy laws in Europe that are stricter than there are here, but here there are data breach laws that are different from in Europe.
Yes.
So you can integrate between them and get something out of it.
And there's the FCC and the European Union, and everybody's always trying to go after them to reveal what they're doing and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And
media, you know, the idiocy, I still think it was idiotic that Google getting accused of stealing data that was on open airwaves when it happened to drive by certain houses. Look at the hoo-ha about that certainly acted as a check on Google. I think it was a stupid check, but it was a check nonetheless.
I agree. I mean, if people are broadcasting passwords into the public, you know, unencrypted passwords into the street, it's not up to, you know, it's not up to, it's like putting a billboard in front of your house and then blaming people for reading it.
that's really an important point, Mike, I think. I think that in this entire discussion, again and again and again, I see efforts to say, you can't know that.
Yeah.
You can't have that knowledge. That is a very dangerous thing for society to ever say.
Yeah.
Whether it's you can't know about your prostate or you can't know some information that passes in the public airwaves. You're not allowed to know that. That's dangerous. You're not allowed to use it in this way or that. that's appropriate and is part of what we should be talking about in legislation and regulation and mores and norms. But not knowing something, never tell me what I can't know. Never.
And as somebody in the chat room did point out, and a good point, that, of course, if Google and Facebook collect data, there's nothing, as we can, as far as we can tell, that keeps them from giving it to the government. So anybody's collecting data on you is collecting data on you.
Right.
Well, what stops them is the market pressure.
Well, so they keep it in secret. Market pressure only works if we know it.
Yeah.
We don't know.
That's why the companies, in the third of their five principles, demand transparency.
Yeah, but do they really want transparency, or they just want to demand it?
No, I think they want it. I think they want it. When it comes to government demanding things, yeah, they want it.
When it comes to themselves, less so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I always go back to the example of Amazon, and I'm criticizing Amazon for not showing up to this party. But, you know, I think the transactional value of I'm recommending this to you because you bought that, and you can see it, and you can change it. That is the model for where this data goes. I was dealing with a startup today that's going to get a lot of neat data on people. And I said the thing to do is to go is to think from day one to be aggressively open about that, to give people the value from that, give them control over it, and they'll give you more data in return as long as they trust you and see that there's value in it.
That's exactly right. There are, you know, we have to remember that the alternative to contextual advertising is mass advertising, where they have to essentially program your brain to want certain things because they want everybody to want the same things on television, for example.
Makes it easier.
In a world in which they are trying to figure out what you really want to determine your desires, that's a much better world. And that's worth having. But again, as Jeff said, as long as they're transparent about it and give you control over it.
Somebody messaged you and me, Mike, on Google Plus, said an interesting thing. He said he'd been working in web advertising for 15 years. And really the most valuable signal was not what people wanted, but what people didn't want.
Yeah.
That knowing that they were wasting money on an ad to somebody who was not interested in that product was actually the most valuable kind of
target. Really good point. Really important point. Yeah.
That's why you see Dig pioneered, but a lot of companies, Facebook does this. Has a thumbs down on the ad. Is this ad useful to you? No, you won't see that ad again. Yeah. Not because they want to be nice to you, but because the company that bought the ad doesn't want to waste its money.
Yeah.
Google may be designing its own server processors. Maybe not designing, just building. Google just gets more and more. Apparently, they have plenty of they're Intel's fifth largest customer. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars on server processors every year. And they've got the manpower and the brain power to design their own server processors. They'd be based on ARM designs. So they wouldn't be, you know, completely their own thing, but they'd probably be some sort of large-scale integration based on an ARM cores.
Yeah.
And they're building their own servers.
Why not?
Yep. Anyway, right?
Yep.
Well, they've been building their own network switches as well for quite a long time.
Really?
Because they had to, they wanted throughput that nobody else could do. So they had to do their own chip design and switch design for that.
Google has always been very smart and very innovative when it comes to building servers and dealing with servers. In the very early years, at least as I learned from In the Plex, which is a great book.
Stephen Levy's book about Google.
And, you know, they bought cheap, they were scrounging together the cheapest computers instead of having the fail-proof servers. They went after the go-ahead-and-let-it-fail servers, which were much cheaper, and then they did a good job with failover technology. And they were able to build data centers for pennies on the dollar, meaning that they could be much more powerful for the same amount of money. They've always been super innovative and super out-of-the-box thinking about this kind of thing. And so I'm not surprised at all that they want to do this. They probably like to build every aspect of the data centers, because that's, after all, what Google is.
Is there any PR damage to that you know, you can't rely on Google to make business? They're going to ruin companies, that they should be more open? Or is this, it's understandable business. Sure.
Well, as long as they just do it in-house, right? It's only for their own personal use. If they started selling chips, might be an issue,
but,
right?
But Apple sells chips. You know, Apple makes their own A7 chips and puts them in their products. That's not.
But they don't sell the chips direct. Motorola. They don't sell the chips direct, right? Google.
We don't have a Heathkit anymore.
That's the point about the ARM design. The ARM design is you buy a specification for it and build your own chips the way you want to do it.
They're not even that great of an
whole chips.
Yeah, they're not even that big of an Intel customer. They're the fifth biggest customer. They account for only 4.3% of that company's revenue. So it's even
that's
if it all went away immediately, it would be kind of a bad quarter for Intel, but
Not the end of the world.
Not at
who's,
all.
Who's the number one customer, Mike? Do you have that?
I don't know.
Who would be the number one customer for Intel processors? Chat room, that's your assignment. HP. We let you go. Go ahead and be back to us. Chat room is smarter than Watson.
Yep.
Forget Watson. If you tried to play Jeopardy against the chat room, you would lose.
You should patent the chat room.
Well, in a sense, have you heard of Local Motors? Local Motors has essentially done that. They have big car companies now coming to them to ask them to take their smarts to use their chat room to redesign cars.
Wow. Hmm. Wow.
Good punchline. The chat room, if it doesn't have knowledge, it gives us a punchline. Who's the number one customer? The NSA?
Or guesses. They're doing a lot of that right now, too. That's we thought you might want to actually research that, but that's okay. Google Google giveth and Google taketh away. In 4.3, Android 4.3, really nice feature that allowed you to install apps on Android, but switch little switches that said, the app doesn't get to collect this data or that data. The feature removed in Android 4.4.2, Google says it was put in by accident. The app's ops privacy feature is now gone. So the idea of you putting in an app but saying, hey, you can't have that app can't have location information or it can't look at my contacts or so forth. Now, obviously, that's going to break apps if an app expects that information. Mm-hmm. You could
fake them out and give them, like, you know, always say, yes, I'm at zero.
Dummy stuff, right?
Yeah. You can give them dummy data.
Yeah.
And yeah, then they could learn to recognize the dummy data, I suppose. But
this is cool. Yeah. I never saw this. The apps ops interface.
It's a very neat idea.
It's usually all or nothing. You either accept the app's requests for all, you know, or you just don't install the app. But the idea that you could give it granular permissions is just great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of those, you know, these trade-offs that's been, you know, we've been trading on for a while. So, you know, Facebook now gives you more granular choice with permissions for apps than it used to. And this is like an education process for users too. When we first started doing these kinds of auth things, you had to make them all or nothing, so otherwise people would just ignore them.
Right.
Or if they've given too many choices, they just click away.
Right.
Say, I don't want to do that. Now people are more used to it, understand the principle, then that's good. But the challenge is still, how do you understand this contextually? What's better is with certain kinds of these APIs, if at the point where the app makes the request and you can understand the context for making the request, you can then give permission with an understanding of what it's trying to do.
iOS does that. So if you install an app that needs location information, the first time it asks for location information on iOS, it will pop up a thing saying, do you want this app to be able to do that? And you can say no.
Right.
So iOS does have sort of this kind of granularity. Yes.
And there are bits and pieces that are a bit like that. But the challenge is always explaining to the user what it is and not giving too many of them. That was the, you know, the Windows, which was it, Vista that did this, where every time you try to do anything,
user
it pops up.
User access control where it would pop up every 30 seconds. Saying, Are you sure you want to do that?
So the balance is you've got to understand what it's trying to do and say, you know, this thing is asking to read your address book. And you're like, okay, why is it asking to read my address book? What's going on there? Or this is asking to send a message as you. It's like, show me the message it's going to send. You know, show me the messages other people have sent with this app. Wait a minute, they're all the same. This app is playing me. So there are situations like that where it starts getting interesting. But you know, to say we can't do this in principle is just, you know, that's wrong.
Yeah.
You can do this. There's lots of ways of doing it. You can either make the APIs return errors, or you can make the APIs return null data or you know, minimal data that doesn't mean they can impersonate you or track where you are. That's very doable, and to say it's not is kind of silly. And there are third-party ROMs that do this.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of ads, Google will now only charge for ads that people actually see. What? They were charging for ads that you couldn't see?
Well, almost every media site was. Actually, MSNBC did this about 2 years ago, where they were alone in the industry, where only if the ad scrolled up to your eyesight.
Oh, I see. So if it's below the fold, not visible.
You'd still pay.
You'd still pay for it. That's a page load. Oh. Yeah.
And Chartbeat did some very interesting work about 3 months ago, a BetaWorks company, where they track your use of a page pixel by pixel. And so what they found was, very interestingly, so advertisers for just that reason would presume that the ads that were down the page were less valuable. The most valuable thing you wanted, of course, was the banner across the top. What Chartbeat found was basically that's a bunch of lettuce that people just scroll right by because they know it's always junk. And they then get to the text and start reading down. And so the ad that gets the most exposure is the ad that's in the middle of the text of a long story, not a slideshow, Business Insider.
I freaking hate those slideshows.
Yep. Yeah.
Don't do slideshows.
An ad down here and an ad even at the bottom, if you've gotten there and read and been engaged in the story, is more valuable than the ad at the top.
Because it's at the point where you want to know what to do next, yes. So yes, you've got all these sites. These sites now have this. Now you finish reading that article. Which of these six things you want to go to? And there's a services that inject those in there. Yeah.
Well, and that's fairly yucky stuff. Often, I regret clicking on those links. Usually,
yes,
with the outside, the outbrain stuff.
The outbrain stuff, particularly, because it's like go to this clickbait link. But the ones that are actually more stories from this same site are actually, if those are done sensibly, are often very useful. But yeah, the outbrain stuff is like, oh God, did I really mean to click on that? I'm so sorry.
I just met a fascinating company called, met them today, in fact, called Infinite Analytics, recommended to me by Tim Berners-Lee. You know, if he'd said, listen, I found an olive oil company you ought to talk to, I'd talk to them.
Yeah.
Right? And so very smart guys where they're looking at your social activity to use that as the basis for making recommendations to you in smart ways. So recommendations and relevance are great. But you know, Outbrain, Upworthy, which we talked about last week, obviously BuzzFeed, the cynicism of them all, the clickbait cynicism of all, has just really gotten disgusting and depressing and
you know,
tiring.
It's also bad because it incents people to use ad blockers and that kind of technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as, you know, Punch the Monkey ads did the same thing. And that's really bad for everybody. It's bad for people who rely on advertising for revenue. Because, if you're obnoxious enough and you piss people off enough, then people will end around it and then nobody gets paid. And that means a lot of journals and blogs and services will no longer monetize and then they're gone. Hey, thanks to Linton in our chat room. Linton looked at the SEC documents for Intel and that's the best. He looked at the 10Q and said that HP is 18% of Intel's revenue, Dell 14%, Lenovo 11%, lots more than the 5%.
Boy, they are still stuck in the PC world.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, because no tablet uses an Intel chip or very few.
The bigger services do, don't they?
The which, say?
The surfaces do, the bigger surfaces.
Surface does, yes. Yeah. That's right.
And of course,
that's a laptop. By any other name. A laptop with a detachable keyboard is still a laptop.
And these companies, especially HP, make a lot of servers.
Too. Yeah.
Yes, that's true, too. That's true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
While we're on Google, Leo, do me a favor. Pick up your Android phone.
Yes. My Moto X, which I can talk to.
Say, okay, Google, let's go caroling.
Okay, Google now, let's go caroling.
Will it work? Will it work?
It's searching. Takes a while sometimes. No.
Okay, well, here's what we get.
Wait a minute. No, it says, which carol would you like to sing?
There you go. That's what you want. Yep. Okay,
which would you like? Jingle Bells Up on the Housetop, Deck the Halls, Oh Christmas Tree.
Let's do Oh Christmas. The one that's out of copyright, yeah.
Yeah, which one's out of copyright? Oh, here we go. It says, it's karaoke.
It's karaoke.
Ready, everybody now. Oh, Christmas tree, thy leaves are so unchangy.
In German, Jeff.
Dein Tafasalotspannenbaum. That is just the weirdest Google search ever. And I want to know why they didn't do that for Ramadan. Or Hanukkah.
Is your dreidel song there?
Yeah,
because they don't like Christmas carols.
Yeah, that's right. If anybody thinks this is pro-Christian, they know they've got another thing coming. So if you say, "Okay, Google, now let's go caroling," it'll do that for you. Yeah,
they should have a Ramadan Google app that watches you and makes sure you don't eat during the day.
Yeah, stop eating.
Yes,
you're eating.
Put down that cheeseburger. It's Ramadan.
Sorry, we should.
Then you can have the
religious jokes at this point. Just don't draw a cartoon of Muhammad. We're all right. Google is readying its own smart thermostat, just like Nest. This is, of course, more signals. How hot is your house? This is from The Information, Jessica Lessen's new blog. I paid for it, so I can report on it. It's called Energy Sense. Google's collecting volunteers to test them. Apparently, I guess it did Power Meter before, which was a web dashboard show. I remember Power Meter, actually. Yeah.
Does the chat room know where Google is finding these volunteers? Where do you go sign up?
How can we sign up?
Yeah.
Anybody? Chat room? Again, Watson. What is the sound Watson makes when it stands thinking? Thinking. Working. I've seen ads now. IBM's doing ads. Watson was helping the NSA for a while. Now they've got ads for what other stuff Watson's doing. Is Watson one thing or is it a platform? What is Watson? Is it Skynet? Watson seems very busy. It's doing a lot of research.
It's a toolkit, isn't it? It's basically a...
It's a toolkit? It can run on different computers?
I would like to see...
It's a Hadoop-based framework that tries to work out what's going on.
Watson is Hadoop?
Yeah. Well, you know that?
Howdy-do.
Really?
I'd like to see Watson combined with one of these new Google Boston Dynamics robots where Watson has to actually hit the button in Jeopardy. I don't think Watson would do as well if it had to compete for speed with the button.
That's right.
Darn it, I want a rematch.
You see those poor schmucks who hit the button like crazy and they never get it.
Right.
So apparently the Google Play Store has some apps. These are called Energy Sense apps that sense energy efficiency, create awareness among users, and raise events. These are not from Google, but they are in the App Store. I'm not sure if this is related to what Google is up to. Amira Frati, writing for the Information, refers to them.
I think this thermostat is just a tip of the iceberg for a larger push by Google and lots of companies into both home automation and the Internet of Things, where it's not just thermostats and Nest, for example, has this incredibly great, actually, smoke detectors.
I took my Nests out.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I kept turning on the heat. You know, sometimes smart things are not. They're too smart.
Yeah, right.
I just want a dumb thermostat. When it's cold, I turn the heat on.
Yep.
I don't need it.
Did it save you
smart.
Any money?
It says it saved me money, but how do I know?
Yeah.
It's smarter than me. Yeah, I didn't put it in the new house. But you know what? You know where the camel's nose under the tent is my Microsoft Xbox One.
Yeah.
Which really is pretty damn smart, and I can talk to it, and I wouldn't, you know, the thing that's missing is the connection. There's no standard how these things talk to one another.
That's right. And there's the home automation market is an enormous market.
It's very fractionalized.
Everything is moving. Yeah, right. There's the big, like, they have
Zigbee and
companies have to come install it for you, or you have to be a home automation genius.
Or you
got to
buy those
version.
Five, you know, those expensive plugs.
Exactly.
For every damn appliance.
Right. And then there's the smartphone controlled world, which on Kickstarter is just an amazing, thriving.
We should do a show. I want to do a home automation show.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can use my house as an example. Yeah,
there you go.
Nice. And we'll show me locked out in the middle of the night and it's raining and I can't. House open. House open. House open. That's the problem. Everybody who has any experience with these things knows that, you know, even the Hue lights, which I like a lot, the idea of controlling the lights via Wi-Fi, have a little flaw. When the power goes out, they turn on full bright as soon as it comes back. In the middle of the night, I wake up and the lights are on. And it's like, what? It's like suddenly blaring bright in my bedroom. Yeah. And I'm reaching for my phone trying to find the Hue app to turn off the lights. And then Lisa has the good sense just to flip the switch.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Zigbee Hue uses Zigbee, Zigbee. And there are a lot of things that do Zigbee, but there's other standards too. And it doesn't seem like there's any standard for any of this.
Yep. And I have the feeling that Apple's iBeacon, their indoor so-called
Apple
GPS thing, I think that's going
to
be a home automation play eventually, because every Apple device of a certain vintage is an iBeacon transmitter, and so you can walk around the house and it'll know where you are. So.
Google's for sure doing this because, they've got the speech recognition, but also remember when they were showing the queue at that Google I.O. And then they showed you waving your CD over it, and then it would know all the songs you had, and there was... Right. It seems like Google's got a lot of the pieces of this puzzle.
The other signals you have, too, a friend of mine who's a professor of EE at Rutgers talks about how every appliance, and this is well known, every appliance has a signature.
Yeah.
So looking at your power pattern, you can see what appliances are on for how long, what time of the day.
Right. Yep.
That's already data that's there and available for the grabbing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an incredible. I really think we should do a show on that.
Let's talk about
so
home.
So much fun.
We want to do a home automation show.
I think it requires a trip to the World's Fair.
Someday, all your phone calls will be video calls. Chromecast gets smarter. In fact, it may ultimately get completely open. Right now, Google's the gatekeeper. We mentioned last week all the new apps. Now the latest word is that there will be an SDK early next year that will allow anybody who wants to Chromecast enable an app to do so without Google's permission. So stand back.
Because I played with the old SDK, and the problem was the process was very complicated. It registered your app with Google, and then you have to do some jiggery-pokery to each Chromecast you wanted to play on to authorize that app as well. And so to actually get it working was quite annoying and made it, not worth doing to distribute anything. Because
I think jiggery-pokery was the dance they were doing at Fezziwig's Christmas party.
You stopped us all there. We didn't hear a thing you said, Kevin, after jiggery-pokery.
How do you spell jiggery-pokery?
This is obviously what I get from going to London for a week.
Public schools. It's public schools. It's all it is.
No, that's an Indianism.
Is it jiggery-pokery?
Yeah.
Jiggery-pokery. Then it makes sense.
You had to register a thing with Google, and that would take a day, and you had to register a domain and a URL with them for you to put your page on, and then you have to do some complicated thing where you log into each Chromecast and bless that URL as well. So you had to bless it on the server side of Google and bless it on the client side to play it back, and then you could write Chromecast stuff. So having an open SDK would be a big win for that, I think, because I think
I'm excited.
It's very, the actual idea is actually very well thought out. It's basically running a web browser. You send it a web page, and then there's a protocol for you to talk back and forth from the device you're holding to the web page that's being displayed on the Chromecast.
Dial, right? This is an open standard dial.
It's kind of. It's got some overlaid stuff of theirs on it as well. Yeah.
Discovery and launch.
Yeah, but also, they were using bits of WebRTC in it, but also they had their own wrap around that as well. So if they're smart, they'll make it more, they just use the WebRTC stuff as that gets more mature and use that directly. But part of the value of it was that, the use case I was using it for was I had a web slideshow, a presentation app, and I was sending that to the Chromecast so I can advance the slides from the phone or whatever, so you can get around that whole issue, and rather than saying clone my screen from whatever I'm holding to this thing, you can say go to this page and let me manipulate that page from the thing I'm holding, which I think is actually more useful than the broadcast your screen model. They're a little bit harder to understand.
Yep.
Google giveth and Google taketh away. The gallery app, the stock gallery app, is no longer on the Play Edition devices.
Good riddance.
That's unfortunate.
Good riddance. Photos.
Photos loses stuff.
So Photos is the replacement? Yeah, Photos is more like a Google Plus interface.
Yep, exactly.
But it is confusing because on many of my phones I have Photos and Gallery.
Right.
And then, of course, if you have a Samsung or an HTC, you have your own gallery, the AOSP gallery, and Photos. Yeah. So Gallery's the odd man out. However, the Find My iPhone Find My Android phone device manager is now available in the Play Store. You can install it on any Android device. Does it work like this? Okay, Google, now Find My phone. The idea being that you'd do that, and then you would walk around the house saying that, looking like an idiot, all the cats looking at you. Going, what is he saying? And then when it triggers, oops, see, it heard all the other stuff I said, but not Find My phone. Find My phone. I have to shut it. And it makes this really loud, annoying noise.
Right.
But it didn't.
So
because you have your phone. Your phone can't find itself.
The one time I left my phone in a place where this would actually work, in a seat cushion in my sofa, it didn't work. So
Hmm. Well, yeah, they've had that thing. They've had the Android device manager that lets you do that. It's just a bit obscure to find, right?
Right.
You can use that now to make them chirp and jump up and down. And you know, they tell you where they are, and you can make them make noises, so you can find them too.
Yeah. And it also will show you a map of where your phone.
Yeah, all of which is very cool. And of course, I didn't set up my Nexus 7; got stolen before you doing lost that. It.
Yeah. What? Your non-working Verizon Nexus 7?
Oh, yeah, I've now bought another one, which now has 4.4. Haven't heard anything from Verizon. Verizon, by the way, meanwhile, is looking evidently to sell its only open spectrum, the LTE spectrum it got, because it can't bear to be open.
So then it gets them off the hook. They don't have to adhere to those FCC rules.
I'm
going to
argue the opposite with the FCC. They've violated my rights by agent.
They should be grandfathered in. A My Glass companion app for Google Glass briefly appeared in the App Store for iOS. Then Android realized what it, I mean, Apple realized what it was and yanked it. I don't know what happened to it.
Weird.
Yeah. Google says that My Glass will return to the App Store later this week. It's going to coincide with the latest monthly update. So that finally, you'll be able to use. You've had to use it with an Android device, right?
Yeah.
You'll now be able to use it with iOS. Aren't you lucky?
It's going
to
be nice.
Going to be nice. Google now shows images in your Google Mail. If Gina were here, this would all be changelog stuff, but I'm just going to kind of roll it all up. But don't worry, they're safe because it's proxying those images.
Well, there was so much confusion about this week.
Yeah,
Wired thought that this meant that every advertiser could see where you are, when in fact it was the opposite.
Opposite, exactly.
Google was caching the images.
Right.
That was a strange article.
Oh.
Misunderstanding exactly was rife.
Yep.
So I'll tell you what's going on here, in my humble opinion. So up to now, if you use Gmail, there would be a button that said load images from the center. You could say always load images from the center. But by default, they would just be a box with an X in it. That probably confused people. So one argument that Google could make is, hey, it's not going to confuse people anymore. They'll see images, but we've sanitized them. So what happens is Google re-encodes them to remove any potential malware, but it also proxies them. So the loading of those images no longer notifies the sender that you're looking at the email or gives that sender any information about you. However, I also have to point out, it means that newsletters and other kind of junk email that you get with images in it is much more valuable to the people sending it, in the sense that you're going to see the images now. You can turn this off in the settings.
Yep.
But if you all of a sudden, I don't want to see those images. And there is the security risk. That's gone.
Yep.
But there is also the issue of, and I think Google's probably doing this because, you know, people who sent email newsletters were complaining, right?
And they also like features that they can do that a lot of other companies can't do. Who can cache?
It's a lot of data.
Gazillions of photographs like that. But people, you know, I think it's a good move because the vast majority of Gmail users probably didn't know that the existence of pictures in email can show the sender your IP address. They find out all kinds of other information about you.
You're loading their web page.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm not clear whether, you know, if this thing, if it's still possible for the sender to find out when you open it. I think it is. They're banana tag type.
I read something that it is the case that they still can. There is a way to do that.
Because then the proxy server will fetch it. So you'll see the first time you see the proxy server get it. That's what they said.
So Google will know. You'll see Google do it.
But I think,
but not on your behalf, just on behalf of everybody who gets that email.
No, because the point is you put a unique URL for each one you send.
Ah, clever.
Which is the classic way you do email tracking. Right, you send an image with a unique URL for each.
Or even not an image, a one-by-one pixel.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, people
the
should...
The other thing is that they, when they read the images, they don't just cache them as is. They parse them and rewrite them.
They re-encode them.
Yeah.
To make sure they're not malicious, so they can detect the malware ones and replace them with stuff that doesn't have buffer overruns and things like that, and they can replace the ones that fail on their, you know, their sandbox GIF parser or whatever with the one that is an X, so that it doesn't like crash lots of machines, it just crashes the one. But they've been doing that for a while as part of the Google crawl architecture.
So one criticism of this is that Google is in the advertising business and they're not in the email marketing business, and this is seen as a move against email marketing. And therefore against a competitive type of advertising. Everyone should know that that's part of the controversy here. And people should also know that this won't hit the mobile devices until sometime next year. I believe it's already been enabled on desktop universally, but not on mobile until next year.
I saw it on desktop. I haven't seen it on mobile. Yeah.
So MailChimp says this is better for them because when images are turned off, effectively, Google hides every bit of information. So they're getting more information than they were, not all the information they'd like or that they get if you use Apple's mail client or something like that.
My belief at this point is that marketers get less information about each user, but more information from more users. So they know when everybody opens it, for example, right. instead of before, a bunch of people opened it and they don't know if the non-openers never saw it or whether they never turned on the picture or whatever. So now there's more clarity, at least about a smaller set of data.
And YouTube has changed its copyright policy so that every single video we've ever put up there is now blocked. Thank you, YouTube. No, it's not as bad as that, but boy, it did very much increase the number of copyright emails we got. We've got a number of videos that are now blocked permanently. The company, Google, I guess, has changed how the automatic content ID works. In fact, in some cases, companies have blocked themselves.
Yeah, right. It's really hammering the, you know, people do game reviews by showing the game.
Yes.
And the game companies don't want these videos blocked. These are fantastic marketing for them. So it's, you know, who are they helping here with this?
Well, it's audio content ID, isn't it? So the game ones was the person who composed the background music in the game is then causing content ID claim against people showing video of the game.
Yeah.
Well, I've just seen lots more takedowns, and I think there's a lot of fraudulent takedowns. The fact that this that a company was able to block itself shows us that the content ID system does nothing to validate any content claim, right? So it's just a stupid system, and it just, to me, my reaction to it is this is why I don't count on Google as a platform. It's not a good platform for serious content creators. Right. It's still the crotch shot channel. And really, I mean, Google, if you want to get serious about content, this is not how you do it.
Yep. Yep, you're right.
I mean, I'm a serious content creator, and we cannot count on any video staying up on Google, period. Right. Ever.
Right.
And I can't imagine we're the only ones. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, a tool, a tip, a number. And if you want to say something, Kevin Marks, you can do something too, and I don't actually, I guess, Mike, you don't have a normal position in this show, but if you want to say something, you can too. But first, a word from Hulu Plus. If you want to turn your iPad, your Nexus 7, your Android phone, your iPhone, your desktop computer into the ultimate personal television, you got to get Hulu Plus. I put it in my entertainment folder because it's ever so entertaining. Hulu Plus lets me watch TV series that are current. I can catch up on series I miss. I can watch, for instance, Almost Human, which I'm really loving, and we have learned is being played out of order. So now I can play it in the right order. Poor Joss Whedon, is it Joss Whedon? Isn't he? He just can never win on these. The Colbert Report, The Daily Show, Tosh.0. I can't stay up late enough to watch Saturday Night Live. No problem, I can watch it on Hulu Plus. They've also got the entire all seasons of shows like Lost and even the original Star Trek. The whole Star Trek stuff is all here. You want to catch up on Shark Tank, week 12. It's lots of fun to watch this on your iPad. They've got full-length movies. They've got ad-free movies and kids content. So that's nice. And it's only $7.99 for a month for everything on Hulu Plus. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to give you 2 weeks free, just in time for the holidays, the end of the year. You want to browse around. You want to see what Hulu Plus is like. The full experience is yours. Shows, episodes, and clips on TV, on movies, originals. Those Hulu Plus originals like Behind the Mask. After 6 years, Jersey parts ways with Hey Reb and UNLV. The Wrong Mans. Two lowly office workers get caught in a web of kidnapping. The Misfits. These are Hulu originals, which is awesome. I love it. You got to check it out. Hulu Plus. .com/twit. Watch and enjoy today for free for the next 2 weeks. Who are those people inside those crazy mascot costumes? Find out in this episode of Behind the Mask. This is actually really fun. All right, let's see. It's not exactly a tool, but it is fun. Every year Google does their Zeitgeist list and the video. I don't remember them doing this. I guess they did this last year. The world. What did the world search for in 2013? Take a look. New beginnings. There's the new princeling, George, little George. New same-sex weddings. A new pope. New frontiers. Google
we are now
Earth.
In a position to look at
That's
the
cool.
other world.
New Jersey.
New Jersey. I don't think they do that one. Ways to help. Boston Marathon. We will never
meet. Child tossing competition.
Yeah. Courage. The importance of life. Oh, that's nice. When we see darkness. Goodbyes. Baroness Thatcher. Play they leave with that. And then Paul Walker. And then Nelson Mandela. Inspiration. Yeah, these are some of the viral, crazy viral videos. I did not see the underwater Harlem Shuffle. I missed that one.
Nothing more inspiring than flaming metal shred coming down in the sky.
When you finally get to that point of acceptance, there's nothing more beautiful.
Yeah. These are like
Mick Jagger.
The last video they
what
find.
What does the fox
camera.
Say? Say my name. It's fun. It's just an ad. Google's great at these search ads. But this is... And then, of course...
Bad Kid.
Bad Kid. San Francisco. That's a nice way to end. Very uplifting. And then you get the zeitgeist, which tells you what people searched for in the year 2013. Paul Walker, Boston Marathon bombing, Nelson Mandela, Cory Monteith, and the iPhone 5S. The top trending. The most searched for people... Miley Cyrus, Drake, Kim Kardashian, Justin Bieber, Beyonce, and Rihanna, once again giving us hope that America can still be strong. Annual events, the number one annual event, Black Friday, the number two annual event, Cyber Monday, then the Daytona 500. You really get a unique perspective on what America cares about when you look at the Google zeitgeist. I used to mock it when Yahoo did this, but this is just as bad.
Yeah.
Athletes, authors, appetizers. The number one appetizer, tomato mozzarella. Beer, the number one beer, Blue Moon. The number one blog and gadget. The number one book, Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. The number one car company, Tesla. Then Bugatti, Mini, Ford, and Jeep.
They also released the top what is blank list. And the number one question asked, what is twerking?
I'm still not sure. Although I think if you search for what is twerking, you'll likely to get some examples, which probably make it easier. Hot searches for today, the Georgia Lottery, of course, because the Mega Millions was won by somebody who just doesn't understand probability and still won.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it. Justin Bieber says he's retiring. Wait a minute. Hold everything. That is
oh,
our.
He's had a long and productive career.
He's getting old.
Yeah, it's time for him to play golf with Bob Hope. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
Well, as we're going into Christmas, it's time to do Google's 12 Days of Giving. If you go to 12daysofgiving.withgoogle.com, you'll see.
I typed 12 Gays of Giving. That's a different search entirely. 12 Days of Giving. That's a long URL.
But that's a weird... Wait a second. That's a weird... Oh, it still goes to Google.com. Okay. No, it says with Google.com. Is that trustworthy?
12 Days of Giving with Google.com? There's no dot?
There's 12 Days of Giving dot with Google.com.
With Google.com. Who owns with Google?
I don't know. I hope I'm not...
That's interesting. I think it's real. If you search for with Google, I mean, you type in with Google, you get Google.
Okay, all right.
Google apparently owns with Google, and the certificate's okay.
All right, just trying to make sure. I didn't want to, find out tomorrow that I...
Yeah.
Microsoft owns plan. Without Google.
In your
Very
dreams.
Good.
Yeah. So it's funny, because Apple's doing the 12 Days of Giving, but theirs starts the day after Christmas. So what do we get?
I don't know. What do you like here? Motivate a teen to go to school?
Oh, you give. See, now I like that. You give. So this is that. This is like that Buck app that Gina had us all install. Right,
exactly. Celebrate wildlife like polar bears.
Oh, who doesn't like polar bears?
Seals.
$1 equals 100 families home for the holidays. I'm not sure how that works.
Wait a minute. The polar bears aren't clubbing baby harp seals, are they? Oh, man. Now who do I give to? Charity water, that's always good. Water projects, this is nice.
That's nice. So a little nice. Holiday number for us.
Yeah.
It's the NSA turns up my lights.
Jeff, we got to give him a clapper.
I've got to get, yeah.
Home automation is not off to a good start.
It's worse here today. It's worse. I must be putting on off less psychic
this
energy.
This is something the university does to drive him nuts.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get rid of a tenured professor these days. Do you have a tip you would like to give us, Mr. Kevin Marks?
I'm not sure I have a tip.
Anything you'd like to talk about?
The thing that amused me this week was Dogecoin. If you've seen that,
what is Doge? Is this related to Bitcoin?
Yes, this is the new cryptocurrency based on the internet meme Doge.
What Doge? The mayor of Venice? Doge?
No, Doge the dog that says stupid things in Comic Sans.
Ah.
Hang on.
I don't know that Doge.
You don't know that meme? Oh, right.
I am so out of it.
You're two memes behind.
Okay. I am two memes behind.
This is the cute dog, and it says, you know, much currency and has this little, you know, like cute dog with saying nonsense thing. It's the success to Lolcast, I suppose. But there's now Dogecoins. So someone has actually made a cryptocurrency based on this. There's a Doge.
So is Doge like the cat that says things funny?
Yes, it's like a Lolcast thing, but
it's the dog response to the funny cat.
It's a different idiom. It's a cute dog that has.
It's a like, Shiba. It's a Shiba Inu.
Yes.
Oh.
You know your meme is your friend here.
yeah.
So, it's been an interesting week for cryptocurrencies because Bitcoin had a crash yesterday again, and
it's down China, to 500.
The Chinese government shut them down. There's all kinds of stuff going on like that.
Yeah.
But also, someone launched Dogecoin, and you can mine Dogecoins and. I've now got 10 Dogecoins because I was messing around with that. So that's
someday those Dogecoins will be worth nothing.
They don't actually have an exchange. I think someone's got an exchange rate for them to Bitcoins, which is like okay.
Apparently we're mining Dogecoins here at Twit. The engineering department has decided to mine them with our spare cycles on our encoding machines.
Well, I mean, you know, I was playing with this because the point is that this is. Like Bitcoin was 3 years ago, you can actually mine it on your own machine and see something happen as opposed to Bitcoin now.
Is it serious or is it a joke?
It's both. It's a joke. But it's a joke. It's a fork of Litecoin. It's based on the script stuff.
It is Litecoin's technology.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But it's just called Dogecoin. It's got a different pool and a different...
Are we actually mining Dogecoin? I don't know what you're
talking about. So this is like, you know, the crypto thing. I mean, the other one this week was in that area was Coinbase, which is they got venture funding for being a Bitcoin exchange that normal people can use. And so I thought, oh, I'll give that a try. And it's basically instead of using PGP, it's now like using E-Trade. So you still have to do lots of fiddling about to configure things, but then you can buy Bitcoins and then they'll deliver them to you like several days later, just like E-Trade does with stocks. So they're trying hard to be the E-Trade of Bitcoins, which makes a certain amount of sense things as people are basically using them to speculate with.
This is nuts. Talking dog and currency.
It was Ozzy's idea.
Do you have anything you'd like to tell us about, Mike?
I do. I have a combination tip and pick. And you don't recall the secret launch that didn't take place at Google for the Moto X, which didn't happen, and you weren't there, and I wasn't there.
You weren't there. None of us was there.
And what they announced at this non-existent event...
But now we can get bamboo.
That's exactly the pick and tip. Now, they told us, or they didn't tell us.
They showed us. Guy Kawasaki had a wooden back.
But they said that they were going to have an unconditional return and replace policy.
That's right.
They said, if you order a yellow phone and you don't like yellow, then send it back. We'll send you whatever color
so
you want.
So can I send my Moto X back and get bamboo?
That is the question. If you have $100...
I thought there was a time factor.
I thought there was a two-week limit.
I don't know what the limit is.
It is now. It is now. It says within I think, 14 days.
So they backed down on that.
Passed the statute of limitations. Oh. But if you've ordered one...
I'd pay
$100
to get wood.
That's right.
I would, because look at it. It's beautiful. But it's white on the front. You can only get a white front.
And it's only bamboo. They originally showed all the teak and all kinds of things. But it's only bamboo. Bamboo is probably the best wood for this.
Sure, it's flexible.
It can also be used as a cutting board in a pinch.
It's antibacterial.
That's right. But I'm just curious so there's a two-week thing. For people who've ordered a Moto X within the last 2 weeks and want a bamboo and you have $100 you want to spend on it, send it back and tell them you want the bamboo one and see if they'll do it. And if they won't, let us know, because they told us that this was going to be an unconditional policy.
I would pay $100 to get bamboo on this. Although I finally gave up and ordered a Note 3 because I want a really big phone.
Yeah.
And now you can get they're back with the writing on the back. You can get a signature.
Yeah, they use a branding iron.
Made in California. Designed. Oh, too long. You can do made in California, though. Look at that. Very cool. Moto X. Or what are you using? You're using Nexus 5.
Nexus 5.
Yeah.
Currently. Yep.
That's a nice one.
Yep.
Nexus 5.
Nexus 5. In fact, I'm surrounded by Nexus 5ers.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, I just had to buy a new Nexus 7 because I dropped mine in the toilet in England, which was kind of annoying.
Oh,
So don't do that. My tip of the week is don't drop your Nexus 7
not.
In the toilet.
It gets wet.
And all right, remember that commercial where every punchline is really? The guy reaches down into the urinal to pick
really?
Up his phone. Did you try to retrieve the Nexus 7?
Kevin? Oh no, I retrieved it, but I tried to dry it out, but
there's not enough rice in the world. Yeah.
But
yeah.
it was a Polish supermarket, and what I thought was rice was actually pasta disguised as rice.
No!
So.
No, it will not work with spetzel. It will not work with pastina.
Not work, like, very small, like, rice-like.
And now he's got a virus.
It's actually really sad, because it rebooted itself, and then it died, and it rebooted itself again. And then the little light at the bottom came on, and it just, like, stayed on, then faded out over a period of about an hour.
I'm trying to come back.
Chat room, Andy in Germany says bamboo is less moist. It has less humidity. So it's good for the antenna. And of course, it's easy to manufacture and it's tough. I think bamboo is perfect.
And it's sustainable.
Yeah, it's sustainable. Yeah. God knows, you grow bamboo in about 4 minutes.
It's sustainable these days.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week in Google. Kevin Kelly's coming up for triangulation. We're going to talk about his cool tools.
Great.
Whole Earth catalog analog. I love this book. It's so great. Jeff Jarvis is professor at City University of New York. You're going to take the holidays off? You're doing anything?
I'm hanging around.
Me too. Yeah. Hanging around. We will not be here next week. We'll do our best of Twig.
Lots of memories of Nexus 7 on that one, I see.
That'll be our Christmas Day episode. And then New Year's Day, we're just going to take the day off. We've decided in an executive decision, because I will have stayed up late that night, that I'm just not going to come in on Wednesday.
That makes sense. Later.
Take the day off. It's New Year's Day. Come on. Kevin Marks, you headed to a Greek market in the near future? Or what are you doing for the holidays?
A Greek market? What?
Where did you drop your phone? Oh, yeah, Polish market.
Polish market.
Polish supermarket.
Yeah.
No, I'm back in San Jose. My son's home from London, so we're having a family Christmas here.
I saw he's interviewing, is it at Cambridge?
My youngest son's interviewing at Cambridge, yes. My oldest son's already at university in London, so that's why I was over there with them. So fingers crossed for Christopher.
So cute. I saw the pictures of you and Christopher eating across the street at the Indian restaurant and preparing for the big interview. So British. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you have to eat Indian food in England. It's the main thing.
It's a must.
Thank you. Actually, it's funny. Andrew coming back, he said, what I really miss is having Vietnamese food. You don't get that in London.
Well, he's just going to have to do 4 years without it.
Yep.
Sorry.
Three.
There you go. Thank you, Kevin. Great to see you again. Have a happy new year. Mike Elgin is our new news director. He begins his tenure January.
January 2nd.
You'll be anchoring TNT and helping us develop our news programming, and I'm really excited to have you.
So am I.
Thrilled to have
you. It's
going
to be an exciting
Good to see you, Mike.
Isn't it nice?
Great work.
Nice.
With you.
Thank you.
They've got a special house up here with a pizza oven. They're ready to go. So thank you for being here. Have a happy. You're going to be going back down to Santa Barbara for the holidays.
Yeah, we're going to a lot of family in the holidays. My son is having an engagement party.
That's sweet.
That's right. Yeah. And I will be working on the 1st because I'm starting on the 2nd. So, but that's okay.
You'll be preparing for the future.
Yes.
So good to have you. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. We do this week in Google on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Are we moving this show? No, this show stays here. I ask this every time. I'm just going to show up on Monday and do whatever you tell me to do, basically. You just direct me.
I'm getting set up to start mining my Doge.
Doge mining! Wait a minute, that looks just like the Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah. And so over here, it's not called mining, it's called digging. So I've started the solo dig. And you can also notice that there's fun, sort of the vocabulary is different. And so much receive, please send.
Much receive.
Much receive.
So let me ask you.
I've got 29 Dogecoins, apparently.
Yeah. Wow, what is a Dogecoin worth
here's,
these
here's
days?
My address if anyone wants nothing. To send me send some Dogecoins. Wow. You know, it'd be great.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I should post my intuition then.
It's just one big pyramid scheme after another, ladies and gentlemen.
But how hilarious would it be if 2020 Dogecoin is the one that survives?
You know, I'm just going to sit and watch you guys all skyrocket to the moon while I just work for plain old American dollars. Our show is on live, as I mentioned, but you can get on-demand audio and video anytime after the fact. twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G is the website. You can also search for Twig on your favorite Netcast client, and you'll be able to download it every week. Subscribe, that way you get it every week. And do us a favor, tell your friends. That's the best way to spread the word about the good work we're doing here at Twit, is to tell your friends and relatives who would be interested. Don't tell the ones that aren't interested. That's just, it's like trying to teach a pig to sing. It doesn't work, and it annoys the pig. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.